Welcome to Work From Your Happy Place, the podcast that equips you with the tools, know-how, and motivation to live your dreams and find your happy place. Be sure to sign up for our free weekly newsletter for a recap of the week's guests and a preview of what's in store. To sign up, simply text the word happy place with no space to 33444. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce the host of Work From Your Happy Place, Belinda Ellsworth.
Hi, everyone. It's Belinda Ellsworth, and welcome to Work From Your Happy Place. I've got a great guest today, Tim Allison. Tim is a lifelong entrepreneur, business coach, best-selling author, and host of the Screw the Naysayers podcast show. At age 31, Tim walked away from a six-figure income and moved to a tiny fishing village in Nova Scotia, Canada. The naysayers laughed when he said he was starting an educational software company. They stopped laughing when sales topped $10 million. His life philosophy is simple: know the life you want and have the courage to live it. At age 60, Tim created the Screw the Naysayers podcast. Each week, he interviews leading experts in innovation, education, entrepreneurship. His goal is to inspire listeners to expect more from life and provide practical advice that can be used to break free from a system that has been set up to encourage them to settle. It's my pleasure to welcome Tim to the show.
Hey, Belinda, thank you for having me.
Oh, well, it's my pleasure. And oh, I absolutely love Nova Scotia. So for anyone that hasn't been there, it is absolutely gorgeous. I can see that's why you wanted to move yourself out there at that early age.
Yeah, it had that pull on me. It's actually my wife was born and raised here in this little, it's an Acadian fishing village. So they were the first descendants of the first French settlers that came to North America, actually settled this little community. And it sort of gets under your skin once you've been here, and it's hard to leave.
Absolutely. So why don't you fill in some of the gaps from your bio and just tell us a little bit more about yourself and your journey?
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of an interesting one. I mean, I grew up in Toronto, and we actually made one little venture out here, tried to move here right after we got married. But the thing about rural Nova Scotia then, and, you know, even today, is that, you know, the job situation, like a lot of rural North America, is pretty bleak. And I just couldn't find a way to make it work the first time, and went back to Toronto, and, you know, I just landed a dream job. I mean, it was it's crazy because it was one of the highest paying selling jobs in the country. And normally, in order to get an interview, you needed, like, you know, 15-20 years experience with an IBM or a Xerox or one of these big companies. But the boss, the president, had just created a new sales cycle, and salesmen, you know, salespeople can sometimes get stubborn after a number of years, and they didn't want to use it. So the short story is that he told them he could grab a kid off the street and teach them to sell better than they could. And I was the kid he grabbed, more or less. And you know what? He was a brilliant man, and I learned so much from him. But my career just exploded. So I really, Belinda, I felt like I was doing what I was supposed to be doing. Like, I'd gone to university, I'd gotten a good job, and here I was in my late 20s, and I was just soaring up that corporate ladder, and, you know, titles and promotion and tailor-made clothes and jewelry and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, after a while, I just sort of came to the realization that I was living a lie, that everybody had me up on this pedestal as if I was the postcard of success. But I had two young children, you know, who were really honestly growing up without a dad. I was, you know, getting home, leaving in the morning, I should say, before they were up. I was getting home after they were already in bed. I was traveling perhaps 2 weeks out of four. And, you know, in order to deal with the stress, I found myself, abusing alcohol and, you know, just not taking care of myself. And so that's what led me to sort of make that what was a really painful decision.
I'm sure.
Harder than I think it should have been. The benefit of hindsight, and this is something I've been trying to share a lot with people, is that, you know, it's our limiting self-beliefs that get in our way of doing things. I mean, even after I quit and listened to everybody call me selfish and that I wasn't taking care of my family and that, you know, that I would really regret it and everything, even after I got back here, I mean, I probably went through, not a word of a lie, Belinda, like 2 or 3 years of grieving the loss of my job. Like, that job had been killing me. I knew I had to leave it, but I felt as if I had given up any hope at a really challenging and successful career as price that I would have to pay in order to live in this little fishing village and to raise our kids here. And that's the way I let those naysayers affect me. I mean, it didn't stop me from making the decision, but it did have this impact that I just didn't see at the time. It's thankful, you know, I owe the thanks, I should say, to a mentor that, you know, came into my life and sort of gave me a good swift kick in the, you know, behind and made me realize that, you know, that I bought into a lie that, you know, that I couldn't have both a career and a lifestyle. And once I got that self-belief going and started asking what if instead of why not,
right,
that's when the business absolutely soared. And so, you know, I will not lie. I mean, like anybody who's run a business for the number of years that I have, or, you know, you or anyone else, there are times when you have to work really hard. And there are times when it, you know, when you'll face situations that are stressful. But when your life and your business is built around the things that you really value in life, which is what I had succeeded in achieving here, I wouldn't have explained it that way back then, but that's what I'd managed to do. I mean, I wanted to be a present parent. I mean, I wanted to be able to attend all of my kids' sporting events and, you know, cultures, you know, dance classes for my daughter, or basketball and soccer for her, or hockey for my son. I mean, you know, in 18 years of Jonathan playing hockey, I didn't miss a single weekend game. It didn't matter where I was in North America. I flew home on the Friday, so at whatever the cost was, so that I could be there the next morning to, you know, to go to that rink. And you know, I don't know. I mean, you cannot put a price tag on stuff like that, can you?
Nope, you sure can't. You absolutely, and you can't take back time. Like once it's gone, it's gone. And you, that is the great thing about, you know, when you get a little bit older, you can look back. But if people are smart, they'll take advice from mentors and watch other people's lives and try to discover what's really important. And how great for you that you kind of recognized that, or were hit kind of between the eyes with it, that it really wasn't living the life that you really, you know, wanted to live. And I think that's it. We have a dream, or we envision, you know, like what this would look like. And then when you get on that ladder of success, sometimes it really isn't aligning with what your vision was, but it seems like, well, this is a pretty good thing.
Yeah.
And then that therein lies the struggle, right?
Yeah. And I think the other thing that happens there is that you get so much external validation, mm-hmm. like, because society measures success, you know, in terms of how fast you move up the corporate ladder, or how much money you're making, or, the possessions we're able to buy for our family. So even though you come home from work exhausted, and you think, oh man, I wanted to do, you know, more with my family. If everybody's spending all this time patting you on the back, telling you how great you're doing, it's that the thing that I think is so hard to explain to people that are say in their early 20s, is that the way we perceive happiness and the way we experience happiness, it changes, you know, over
Absolutely.
Time. And in our 20s, we're especially in our early 20s, we're in the pursuit. Like, we think we know what we want, and we're after it. And happiness to us is if I get that, I'll be happy. It's when you have in my book, I talk about, you know, the major WTF moments. Like, you know, when you just wake up and you say, how did this happen? You know, I put all this time and effort into this, and I'm miserable. You know,
right.
I mean, I sacrifice time with family and everything else. And you know, it's really easy in those circumstances to, you know, beat the crap out of ourselves and mm-hmm. to feel stupid, and to even, you know, to lower our self-esteem even more, when, you know, what we have to realize is that we were doing our best. We were doing our absolute best and doing what we really thought was the right thing. The trick is to learn from it. And
yep.
But the mission I'm on nowadays, the thing that really is upsetting me is that we're living in a time where younger generation, so I'm talking to people in their teens and their, you know, even all the way up through to the millennials, but certainly, you know, more, say, early 20s, they're living in a time of the most significant change in the structure of the workforce since, I would say, the Industrial Revolution, and or certainly when we brought automation to the farm sector, and, you mm-hmm. know, people came to the cities, those kind of things. I mean, we have 50% of North Americans under the age of 30 are either unemployed or underemployed. Most of them are underemployed. a ton of them are working, you know, in jobs that they really dislike. A lot of them are on a turnstile of, you know, temporary jobs. And the research I was talking, you know, one of my guests the other day was a guy named Don Wetrick, amazing innovation teacher from Noblesville, Indianapolis. But his research is showing that by 2020, which is, that's only 18 months or so, Belinda, they're saying one of every two jobs in the United States will be in the new gig economy. That translates into all these people are going to, you know, either take low-paying work that they hate, or they're going to have to learn how to, you know, create their own job, and they're going to have to learn how to define what they want from life fast. Because if they don't figure out what it is they really want to achieve, they're going to wake up, you know, in a decade's time and be very unhappy with, you know, with where they're at. And so that's really what, you know, motivated me. I actually even put in for my pension. I was ready to head to the beach and the campgrounds and everything. And then this burr got under my butt, and I said, no, we got to get out there. And I don't know about you, but I'm so angry at all of the millennial bashing and all the bashing of these youngsters and telling them that, you know, they're entitled and everything. I mean,
I am too. I completely agree. It drives me crazy. Yes.
Yeah. Like we send them to school, and what do we tell them in school? We tell them to sit down, to behave, to you know, to wait for instructions. We tell them that failure is to be avoided at all costs. And then when they, you know, those skills, I'm not saying the knowledge in school is very useful. Knowledge is always useful. But these skills that we're teaching them are totally useless when it comes to, well, the job's not there. You promised me a job, you know, society. You told me if I went to university and I saved my money and I took on a bunch of debt and I got my college degree or university education that, you know, that a good job would be waiting for me. The job's not there. We've trained them to sit back and wait for instructions. Nobody's giving them the instructions, and there's no manual for them, you know, and then we have the audacity as those that are a little older to, you know, to say that they're, you know, that they're entitled. I mean, we really helped create this problem. And I just think as a society, we've got to work a lot harder to provide them, you know, with an understanding of, you know, how to figure out what it is they really want in life, how to, you know, find opportunities, that challenging conventional wisdom is a good thing. It's not a bad thing, you know?
Right.
And that we are going to fall down and scrape our knees, and that's okay, because they're actually, you know, awesome learning experiences that gets you closer to what you, you know, what you want to do. But our kids are coming out of school with, and here's the thing. I mean, I've talked on my show in the last month and a half to people in four continents and seven different countries. Everybody's saying the same thing. Like, it's not like you can look one place and say they got it figured out. Pardon my language, but we're just screwing over this entire generation. And, you know, it's time to speak out.
Wow. That's pretty powerful. Absolutely. So tell us a little bit more about your business today. Tell us a little bit more about what you do today.
Sure, thanks. Well, so we exist to help solve that problem, you know, for young adults. So, I mean, it started with the book, which is a very self-deprecating. I mean, it's not a hero's journey. I mean, who wants to hear a story about, you know, something I did 30 years ago in terms of how the business worked? Because the business world that exists today is totally different. But I talk about where the pain points were. So I explain that if you waste your 20s following goals and objectives that other people have set for you, which is what I did, that it gets very hard to extricate yourself from that mess. And I talk about how, you know, painful that was. And I also take a pretty sarcastic look at the messages that were, you know, I want young people to understand that the system, you said in the introduction, I mean, the system has been set up to encourage them to, you know, to settle. People form expectations about what we're capable of and what our role in society should be. And they surround us with negativity every time we try and stretch outside those boundaries. So then I started the podcast, which just sort of, you know, grew from that. And that's to, you know, inspire and educate. And I'm, you know, I've talking to such a variety of folks, much like you. And it's, you know, it's the purpose just to energize folks. And then I'm looking to what I'll be launching in the next few months is I'm creating an online community called You Got This. And it's really aimed at all these young people, most of whom probably never thought they were going to have to start their own business, but they more or less don't have a choice, I should say. Even if it's just to be a freelancer, they're going to have to do it. it. And so I'm just going to try and gather resources there and build a community of mentors that can, you know, that can help them and see if we can't, you know, smooth this ride a little bit for them. Because the irony is, even with all this change, there is a silver lining here, because they're living in it at a time when it's never been easier to start a business. You know, when it's never been, you know, easier to launch or to deal with customers around the world or, you know, any of those kind of things. We just have to empower, you know, and so that's really what the mission is all about. And trying to create much like you, I think, just trying to create a movement of positivity and connect with like-minded individuals, and together, hopefully, we can change the world.
Well, that's pretty awesome. So tell me now, you talked a little bit about skill sets in there, which I am always a great fan of identifying different people's skill sets that they feel really have contributed to their overall success. What would you say that two of your greatest skill sets have been that have really just kind of helped you in your journey?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, I would describe, I'm going to steal from the name from a guy, an author named Toff Evans, who's wrote a wonderful book called Everyone Has a Plan Until Shit Happens. But he's an amazing guy. You know, it starts with him talking about how he was thinking about ending his life and turning it around. But Toff talks about something called practical resilience. And I think that's what I had. Like, I got here and there's just no way I was leaving again. You know, I was going to do this. But I was resilient, but it was practical. In other words, you know, when you try things in business, some of them are going to work and some of them aren't. And I didn't buy into that myth that, you know, winners never quit.
Right.
Winners don't quit the big goals. I was resilient enough to say, well, no, I'm going to make this work. But there are a lot of different ways that we could make it work. And I think it's a skill that a lot of entrepreneurs lack, is the ability to know, you know, when it's time to let go of a particular idea and when it's time that, well, if just with a little more work, I can push through it. But too often, I think people stick with things too long. In other words, the market is actually telling them that it's not going to work. And so I was really intuitive and able to, you know, to sort of, I think, you know, sense those moments. And then I certainly, the other one, I think, is a skill that it's a teachable skill. And it's actually even easier today because of technology, but it's creating relationships. Like, you know, people, even in this day and age where we're all connecting, you know, via technology, people mm-hmm. still buy from people that they like and trust. And so creating relationships you know, true story. I was, when my software company was really kind of at its pinnacle, I thought it might be a good time just to reach out to my customers and ask them, you know, why they were buying from me. Because we were a small player. Like, there were only two companies really in the specific niche I was in. And the other company was way bigger, had much more marketing money and everything else. And my product was actually more expensive. So I thought, I'm going to go out and ask. And I went into that so convinced everybody was going to tell me, man, Tim, it's your product. I mean, you're just so much better, eh? Not a word of a lie. 10 of my best customers I asked, not one of them mentioned my product when I asked them why they bought from me. And I got defensive. I said, well, I mean, but it, and I started rhyming off all of the wonderful features, you know, and benefits of it. And they all, more or less to a person, said, that's true. But then they would tell me what the other guy's product did better than mine. And I said, well, I don't understand. Like, why are you buying from me? And they said, well, it's your passion. It's because we know that you care. You know, we know that you really, really want us to, you know, succeed. And that was a, you know, an eye-opening conversation for me. And again, it's the reason why small businesses have such competitive advantage, you know, today over the big businesses, is because when people deal with us, they're dealing with, you know, whoever runs the company, or they can get there pretty fast. Let's put it that way. And we can deal with our customers, and we can speak to them, and we can create those relationships. But those are two, you know, that immediately come to mind.
You know, it was interesting. I couldn't agree with you more. So it was really interesting. So on Friday, I don't have anybody work in my office on Fridays. I give everybody Friday off because I just like them to have a long weekend every weekend. So we get all of our work done in Monday through Thursday. And I've done that for 20 plus years. And it's been awesome. So, and it's created a lot of loyalty. But sure. Therefore, we don't have anybody answering the phones on Fridays. And most of the time, we'll have some people kind of sometimes going in and check messages and things like that. So we've been doing, you know, in the old days, we did real customer service. In fact, I was talking to some of my staff about it. In the old days, like, people called in to order from us. They didn't go online and order. And there wasn't all these sales pages and all of this stuff. We just had stacks of order forms sitting by our desk, and people yeah. called in and we took their order. And we almost always were able to navigate them to say, well, here's what this would do for you, or, you know, right. upsell them a bit, but really just help them with their need. Like, well, what are you looking for? And so on Friday, I was doing this webinar. It was a troubleshooting webinar because we were having huge issues. So I had four people on this Zoom webinar, and we're all sitting there discussing, and this one web designer person is telling me, no one's having issues with this. And it was just, we were just arguing all over the place about this because I was seeing different from our customers. And the phone happened to ring. I looked down at the phone and it said Edmonton. So I knew, like, this is a customer for sure. And I thought, I'm picking up the phone. So I said, you know, step into success. And she said, I'm on your website right now and I'm trying to order and I can't get this to work, which I loved. So I go, I'm going to put you on speakerphone. So she tells the story to the rest of them, and then everybody's listening. And so then they were kind of like, oh, we'll do this and do this. And so then they realized, like, yeah, there is a problem here. So, yeah. But then I said, I'll step out of the office of where that Zoom meeting was going on. And I said, well, you know, she goes, first of all, I can't even believe you are answering your phone. I can't even believe I get to talk to you. Yeah. And so then we talked some more. And by the time it was done, she ended up buying more because she hadn't really understood. I talked her through it. The sale ended up being more. She was so happy. She posted later about the excellent customer service that she got. Yeah. And I saw it. And I'm like, we don't do enough of that anymore because of that. We don't have that same connection from online ordering. And I'm really taking a hard look at, not, of course, ending that, but what can we do to make that experience better for that person who's ordering online? Because I know that if I talk to them and they get to ask questions, guess what? They're going to get more of what they need. And it was just a really good kind of example on all fronts from these techie people going, oh no, it works fine.
Yeah.
No, it really doesn't.
It's the ultimate challenge, I think, for, you know, for a lot of companies, is just sort of finding that, you know, that, the appropriate mix. And it depends an awful lot too on who we're selling to, because, I mean, certain, you know, age groups or whatever are just far more, you know, comfortable with navigating the technology, and things that drive someone like me right around the bend, they'll just bounce around it or something. You know?
I know. So tell me, what does working from your happy place mean to you?
You know, I've thought about that. I figured that question was coming. Like, I think I'd almost answer it with two different answers. The first answer, what I would say, is working from my happy place is what I'm doing right now. I'm sitting here, I'm looking out my bay window into my backyard at, you know, 20 or 30 acres of forest, and there's not a human being in sight. And, you know, just living where I want it, where I want to be. And I'm talking to, you know, people that share my values, and that, you know, we're just meeting virtually here, but, you know, clearly I'd like and respect, you know, what you represent and who you are, and I feel it coming back. And that's really been a huge part of it. I guess if I was talking to a young person and they asked me that, I'd say that it's, you know, for me, it's just all about living a life that aligns with the things that are important to me, you know, and taking control of that, you know, and being in control of that life.
Well, that's great. And it's funny, it's the question every time I ask it, it causes pause. And then people say, I had to really think about this really hard. But it means a lot of different things to different people. So I think it's always a fun question to ask. So what advice would you give to others who want to be entrepreneurs?
Yeah. Well, I think it all starts with, you know, making sure you get rid of all that, you know, any belief systems you have that might be limiting your ability to, you know, to think that you can actually, get the life you want. You really have to allow yourself to believe that it is possible you know, for you to, you know, to get that life. And when it comes to starting your own business, then it, you know, you've got such a unique opportunity if you're starting with a blank canvas. So design the business around your life. Like, start by asking, what are the things that are really important to you? Like, what are, you know, for me, for example, I'm, you know, the non-negotiable was that I was going to have my weekends free, you know, for, you know, for family. Get those things actually written down and then start to build your, you know, what you want to do in terms of your business, you know, around that. Finding opportunities, I mean, gosh, it's never been easier. I mean, there's people spend too much time thinking they've got to come up with the one new idea that nobody in the world's ever thought of. And, you know, there's the chances of you, me, or anybody else coming up with that is like so small. You know, borrow. I mean, I think the best way to start a business is to borrow, you know, borrow or steal, adapt and improve. You know, so figure out what your interests, you know, where your interests are, what you think you're good at. Definitely leverage your strengths. We spend way too much time telling people to fix their weaknesses. Nah, you know, hire for your weaknesses.
Right.
Leverage your strengths. And I guess the last and really the most important piece of advice is don't spend money before you've tested feasibility. It's just so easy these days to test feasibility, even before you've built a product, you know, to get out there and find out, and have what if conversations and then based on the feedback you're getting from the market, then that's the product that, or service that will evolve. I don't know. I guess the other obvious, without sounding self-serving, but, you know, for people like you and me and everything else, it can be challenging to do it always all by yourself. I mean, you know, talk to people, look for mentors, exchange ideas. Too many people hide their ideas too. That's another thing. They think they're afraid somebody will steal it.
Oh, I know.
Stand up on a soapbox and shout at the top of your lungs. And the more people you tell, the greater your chance you'll connect with that one person that can really help you.
Advice right there, because I swear I just get people that go, well, I've got an idea, but like, you know, I'm not going to share that right now. And I'm thinking, why not? I could probably, I'd love to bounce that around for you. What makes you think I'm going to steal every idea that happens to come my way? I'm pretty busy. Yeah. So I'm like, okay. You need advice, and you. I always say, this is my big thing, and I say it to every single person, you need to find a mentor and you should be a mentor. So yeah. If you can be doing both of those things at the exact same time, no matter where you are in your journey, you can be a young person and still be a mentor to a younger person. And even if you are, you know, a seasoned person, I can still find a mentor. And guess what? That could be in a younger person. Many of the people that I'm gleaning the knowledge that I need in order to move this thing forward on this platform that we're doing, they're not my age. They're, you know, 30. So I'm like, okay. And so you just got to be smart enough at every level. If you were always being a mentor to someone and finding a mentor in someone, no matter what age you are, oh my gosh, your life would be really full.
Yeah, that's golden advice. I'm taking advice right now. I have a university student who's interning, paid internship with me this summer. So Sammy is all of 21 years old. And after the first interview, when I already knew I was going to offer the job, but I went home and I said to my wife, I'm not sure who was mentoring who, and it was just an interview. The ideas that are coming, you know, and she's 21 years old, but you know, the world is dramatically different and evolving, and we can all learn from each other, and that's what makes it such a fun place if we're open to it.
That's right. So in closing, why don't you tell us some exciting things you're working on and make sure that all of our guests know where to find you.
Well, thank you. That's kind. So first of all, for sure, folks, you know, head over to www.screwthenaysayers.com. And yes, it is kind of fun to say that. But if you get over there, there's actually a special gift that I just actually got put up today. And it's an ultimate checklist on how to be a happy entrepreneur. And if you were to download that, I'll let you in on another secret. I'm actually going to send you 7 little videos for free to talk about how you can implement that, because it's just part of my mission of spreading this this vision of, you know, create your own job and be happy in doing it. And then please would love to see if people head over and check out the podcast, which is also called Screw the Naysayers. We're up at every Tuesday at 9 o'clock Eastern, and a new episode goes up there. So, and yeah, thanks.
Well, thank you so much. It's been a delightful interview, and I'm sure our paths will cross again.
I sure hope so. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks for joining us at Work From Your Happy Place. If you like what you hear, please share it with your friends, and be sure to rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. For a free gift on finding your own happy place, please visit workfromyourhappyplace.com and click on the free audio button. Thanks again for listening.